start the call, please.
Certainly. Thank you. We'll go ahead and begin at this time. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the At-Large Ad Hoc Working Group on IANA Transition and ICANN Accountability, taking place on Wednesday, the 13th of January, 2016 at 1400 UTC. On the call today, we have Tamahiro Fujisaki, Jean-Jacques Subernat, Cheryl Langdonor, Barack Otunio, Alan Greenberg, Avery Doria, Olivia Crippen-LeBlanc, Sebastian Bachelet, Leon Sanchez, Shuan Ojadeji, and Tijani Benjama on the English channel. On the Spanish channel, we have Alberto Soto. From staff, we have Heidi Ulrich and myself, Terry Agnew. Our Spanish interpreters today are Veronica and David. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking, not only for transcription purposes, but also for our interpreters. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Olivier.
Thank you very much, Terry. Olivier Cavan of Not Speaking. Have we missed anyone on the roll call? Okay, total silence. So we've got everyone. Welcome, everybody, in this first call of 2016 for this working group. Best wishes to everyone on this new year. It fills with all of the work taking place in the IANA Issues Working Group or the IANA CWG, but mostly on the CCWG accountability. It feels like we're in the middle of the year, doesn't it? Just so many calls already, and therefore that means we've got a lot to catch up on this working group. The agenda is going to be having a quick update on the ICG, which I believe has a call later on this week, so we might actually focus on an ICG update a bit further if we have a second call this week. Then we'll have an update and a few questions as to where we want to go as far as the cross-community working group on IANA stewardship transition is concerned. There was a call yesterday that had quite a few discussions on IPR issues, intellectual property issues, you know, IANA.org, etc. Then we have the majority of this call, 55 minutes, on CCWG accountability, and lots to discuss in that, as I just said. Does anybody wish to add anything to this agenda or amend anything to this agenda?
It's Alan. Nothing to add. I'll just note the IANA, the CCWG was not, schedule was not updated to have provide documents. There's a lot of documents, but they're not something that are easily displayable at this point, or at least for the level that we're likely to look at them, but I will be prepared to talk about most of them.
Okay, thanks very much, Alan. Thanks for this warning, advance warning. Is there a location where these documents might be located? Maybe a link to the last few calls of the CCWG accountability?
The agendas for each of the calls have documents pointed to. I'm not sure they're in a single place. Leon may know better.
Okay, thanks. It's just if I can ask anyone who knows and just put the links on the chat, then we will be able to link to those documents in case you're going through these. I find the amount of work and volume in the accountability thread to be increasingly challenging.
In general, they've been distributed as email attachments, and then the agenda has pointed to the emails. So I don't think they're in any central place, but I may be wrong on that.
Okay. Thanks for this, Alan. It's Olivia speaking. All right. That's helpful. I think that there is a document store somewhere in the accountability wiki or whatever it's called. Yeah, the set of web pages, but I don't know how updated that is. Anyway, let's get moving. First, our action items. And there were no action items, just keep on doing whatever you're doing so far. So let's move down to agenda item number 3, then IANA Coordination Group and an ICG update. We have Jean-Jacques Subrenat, who is with us, and Jean-Jacques, you therefore have the floor.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Jean-Jacques speaking. Hello all. Happy New Year. If I haven't seen, quote-unquote, seen you since the 1st of January. As you know, the ICG is in reception mode. It's not seeing anything. because the last two items of work for us was, on the one hand, completing our draft proposal. That has been terminated, and we stated clearly that we were waiting just for the final input from the accountability CCWG. And the second thing, which I have already spoken about at this venue, is the completion of our report on the public comments received about our proposed transition plan. And I've given you both links on this chat. And so because, as you know, the ICG is not chartered to invent anything, it is the assembler of contributions from various parts of the community. We are not in capacity to fill in the space, as it were, or invent anything whilst waiting for the CCWG accountability contribution. Of course, individually, we follow what happens elsewhere, but I'm afraid I don't have anything to report as ICG member. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Thanks very much, Jean-Jacques. The floor is open for questions. Alan Greenberg, you have the floor.
Yeah, thank you. It's not a question, but just a statement. There has been a fair amount of participation by a number of ICG members, and specifically Alyssa Cooper, in some recent meetings. As we'll talk about when we get to the CCWG, we do not have an updated agenda right now or schedule when we plan to be completed for a number of reasons. And that, of course, is causing some concern within the ICG. And I think that's one of the reasons there is a meeting this week. But clearly there is concern on several levels about the fact that things are late. The NTIA was asked, and the only answer was, we've said before, every time you delay, it increases risk. So that's where we are.
Yes, Alan, thanks for that remark. This is Jean-Jacques speaking. Yes, as individual members of the ICG, we are aware of that. But as a group, it was decided that our chair, Alyssa Cooper, would keep in touch with the chairs of whatever group has to be in contact with. Yes, we do have some concerns, but they have not been voiced as a body. And thanks for reminding me, Adam, that this evening at 2000 UTC, the ICG will have another teleconference call. And I'm looking forward to that very much, because I hope that some of our members will be able to fill us in on the latest news from CCWG accountability. One last point I could point out is that there has been some discussion on the ICG mailing list about whether there would be cause for the ICG to meet in the margins of ICANN 55 in Marrakesh. And at least at this stage of my reading the email exchanges, it seems that the majority of members think it is not necessary to have a face-to-face meeting in Marrakesh, but that we could very well do what we've done all along in much greater occasions, which is to have teleconferences. But this may change. So in any case, we are all waiting for our collective wisdom to bloom this evening at 2000 UTC. Thanks.
Yeah, it's Alan. Alyssa did comment that at this point it's not clear whether there will be a need for a face-to-face. Since the majority of people on the ICG will likely be in Marrakesh, they may well meet, but that will be decided as they go along. At least that was her comment as of yesterday.
Yes, I would say that as an individual member of ICG representing the at-large, I would need to have my trip funded if there was an ICG meeting in Marrakesh. And I think that the fact that several members of the ICG will be going there in any case, but in another capacity, is not enough of of an administrative arrangement for me. I need the travel and accommodation support. Thanks.
Thanks very much for this, Jean-Jacques. Let's ask any other questions. Okay, well, if we have another call later on this week in this working group, I believe there's a call tonight then, so you'll probably be able to give us more information about what's been happening, I guess.
Yes, Olivier, this is Jean-Jacques, yes.
Okay, thank you, Jean-Jacques. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. Can you hear me better? I had the feedback that my voice was very faint.
I'm hearing you fine.
Am I okay? Okay.
I don't know, but the interpreters often have problems. I have no problem.
My microphone had fallen off, so I'm not sure. Hopefully it's fine now. Let's move on then and go into the CWG INS stewardship transition. And as I mentioned a bit earlier, there was a call that took place yesterday, and I note that Alan has immediately put his hand up. It's to do with the next agenda item, or is it still to do with the INA coordination group?
No, it's to do with the agenda item you're going into.
Ah, okay. So I'll just do a quick intro. Effectively, the call that took place yesterday is linked to your agenda and had a large chunk of it devoted to the intellectual property issues of INA.org and the design team IPR's results. There was a little implementation update on how things were moving forward, and we had a presentation that was given on how the implementation was taking place. Very nice presentation indeed, and it looks like things are now in place for transfers and involvement of the root zone maintainer, etc. So I'm not too concerned about that personally, but I'll be, you know, asking for everyone else to comment on this. And that was pretty much most of what was discussed as far as the substance is concerned, if I recall correctly. The discussion regarding the bylaws and the cross-committee working group on accountability and the link with these two was also touched on, but I didn't see very much progress on that. And so I guess I can open the floor right away to Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. I was going to comment on two things. One is the implementation, and the second is the intellectual property and domain name issue. On the implementation, I will echo what you were saying. The presentation was good, but more important, I think, the people that ICANN has assigned to this are doing, from what I can tell, a really good job. Many of us on the CWG, I don't think had any appreciation for anywhere near the complexity of what we were requesting. I mean, there are just so many things that have to be done, many of them in parallel. And it is being tackled with a level of professionalism that, to be blunt, I don't often see in ICANN. So I think we've, you know, maybe we learned a lot out of the new GTLD implementation, but I'm very impressed both with the work that's being done and the level of reporting that's going along with it and the awareness of the people doing the reporting of what's going on. So I've been very impressed. You know, I think if we had asked for the sort of people hours or people days or something of the people who were writing the policies in the CWG, what this was going to take, they probably would have underestimated the implementation by an order of magnitude at least. So I'm very pleased with how that's going. There was a very substantive discussion on the intellectual property issue, who owns IANA, who should own IANA trademark, and the domain name. Greg Shayton and a group of people have put together a document looking into the legal and the the trademark issues to the nth degree, and came up with a number of principles and a number of practices and stuff like that. We spent a long amount of time going over it. There were a number of us, and I think I was probably among the leaders, but including several of the other community representatives who basically said, this is all very good, but we need to move forward. There was a strong push from some from Greg to begin with that issues such as the principle of how independent should the trademark owner be, and they had a principle that it should be independent. Some of us, in fact, believed that less independent, if you give it to someone who really cares about it, you're likely to have better stewardship than giving it to someone who's completely independent. And, you know, there's a lot of discussion of when we said independent, do we mean independent of the IANA functions operator? Do we mean independent of any of the groups? It wasn't even clear. And there was a suggestion that we needed more discussion, more in-depth debate over some of these issues going forward. And I think there may actually have been a decision saying independence is not all that important. But more important than that, there was a decision that came out of the meeting saying we need to move forward. The risk associated with doing this properly is far larger than the risk associated with not doing it. There is virtually no way that a separate trust could be set up in the time frame we're looking at. Just looking at the IETF processes, which would have to go through to endorse it, including all of the appeal processes, would push us past the implementation window for the transition. There was general agreement coming out of the meeting. I believe, I'd like to see the summary notes, and I haven't had a chance to look at anything yet, but I believe there was an agreement that we just need to start implementing this. Yes, there are risks associated with what if things blow up, but if things blow up between ICANN and the IETF, there are so many things at risk. I mean, if you look at all the work that's going on regarding IDN, regarding who is and its follow-ons and things like that, a rift between ICANN and the IETF is a really significant problem. So basically, I think we have addressed that issue. There was some talk about holding yet another meeting and another, you know, long, who knows how long debate. In the end, Greg took the position that I value in a good lawyer. A lawyer presents the issues, identifies the risks, and then lets the client make a decision, and once the decision is made, supports that decision, and that's where we seem to be at this point. So I think we have gotten over the hump on that. It's taken a lot longer than it should have, but I think we're okay. So, you know, bottom line is this will go to the IETF trust, and we'll hammer out the agreements, and everyone will be happy. And if things blow up in the future, then we address them, period. So that's basically my report on the CWG.
Thank you very much for this, Alan. Olivier Capin-Leblanc speaking. And you will all find the notes from that meeting actually on shared on the Adobe Connect at the moment. One thing which you didn't touch on, and I guess you've already kind of made the move forward on this. Yes, there are two choices, the one to create a new trust and the one to use the IETF trust, the already existing IETF trust. One of the action items in this agenda item on the IANA IPR was as follows, and it was it wasn't made as a consensus call per se on the call, but some kind of way to ask the members of the CWG to go and ask their communities the following question. Does anyone object or feel strongly differently about the provisional conclusion that there is no need for structural neutrality, which would require the creation of a new trust? In other words, does anyone really believe we need a new trust and is ready to fight for this? And so I guess I put the question here to everyone, whether everyone on the call, whether anyone feels strongly that we need a new trust, or are we all okay to go with the IETF trust? Alan Greenberg.
Yeah, thank you. You're correct. No formal decision was made because our practice is we don't make formal decisions in one call with a limited number of people on the call. The analysis, the risk analysis is such that if we are trying to form a new trust, it will not happen in the time frame, period. You know, it takes at least 6 months. Andrew Sullivan thinks it would take at least 6 months to go through the IETF process, assuming we knew what we were doing and started immediately, and we don't. We don't have that structure ready. And 6 months just kills the window. So the bottom line is nobody on the call felt that we should do anything other than go with the IETF trust and hammer out an agreement. Greg's original recommendation was to talk about it more. At the end of the call, he conceded because he did a good job of, but agreed that that is the clear message that was coming from this call. So the chairs have put out a request for a consensus call, but I don't see any way forward. There was no support on the call for doing it through some other independent method, and there were many people, or at least several people, who made very strong pleas that we should not try to go down that path or even continue talking about it.
Thanks for this, Alan. Next is Sebastian Bachelet.
Hello. Sebastian Bachelet speaking. If you can hear me well.
We can't hear you well, but we can hear you sort of.
You're very faint. You're quite faint here.
Okay. I will try to do better.
That's better.
Ah, that's a lot better.
Is it better now? Okay. Thank you.
Yes, it is.
Great. I have no problem with this this proposal. I would hope that in the reverse, IETF will still trust ICANN, and I am not sure we're going to this path. They want change in the bylaw of ICANN, they want to be more independent, and want a lot of things, and I just hope that we can bargain something here. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for this, Sebastian. It's a case, I guess, of not having very much choice. The time is just so late on this. I personally originally felt a little negative about transferring this to the IETF Trust for reasons which have been given a while ago, that the IETF Trust was not quite geared for this sort of thing. But that said, now looking at what the alternatives are and the fact that there isn't really any alternative, the fact that the IETF folks are not the devil reincarnated, far from it, this looks like a viable solution. And I do agree that, and I think it was felt on the call, we have spent probably way too much time on this, but I did want to commend the work of DTIPR. Greg and his colleagues have done an incredible amount of thorough work on this, and I was actually very pleased to see it, and I guess that somehow convinced me that this was the least negative solution to go forward with. Does that make sense? Alan Greenberg, your hand is still up.
Yeah, my hand is up again. Let's be clear. In a different world where there was more trust between various bodies, there could have been simpler ways of doing this. The world didn't unfold that way. The numbers community made a very strong statement to the ICG saying that the current arrangement was not acceptable. The IETF stepped up and said that is one alternative, and I think it is something that that can work. Whether we would have designed it if we were each king that way, that's a different issue altogether. Ultimately, the only group that has any real stake in this game is the IETF. Companies rebrand themselves regularly. Sometimes they fail because of it, but usually they don't. The Internet is not going to fail if we have to stop using the term IANA. If we have to stop using IANA.org, and I'm looking at worst-case scenarios, the only group that has a real problem is the IETF because the domain name is buried in code. Bad practice, but it is. The other groups, we can change if we have to. So the risk analysis is such that we can survive even if all this falls apart, and we're not really predicting it's going to fall apart. So let's move ahead and do onto real problems.
Thanks for this, Alan. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. And I note in the chat that Avery is saying maybe all of the issues are making sure that will be included in the MOU. Sorry, I'm not making sense. All of the issues that were touched on, I guess, in DTIPR's paper will probably have to be embedded in the actual signing of the MOU. So that's the way forward. Now, regarding the next part here, the CCWG accountability update and the ICANN bylaws, are there any comments on any of this? But my own comments with regards to the IPR, to the link with the CCWG accountability is that there is, at some point I was a bit concerned that there wasn't very much interaction between the two groups. Now it looks as though there is a lot more interaction because of people taking part in both groups. So I'm less concerned about this than about the slipping of the timetable. And regarding the bylaws, the ICANN bylaws relating to the CWG, well, the bulk work of the bylaw rewriting is taking place in the CCWG, and I guess we'll be talking about this in a moment. The ones that relate specifically to the CWG, I'm even inclined to say that we could then say, look, this satisfies the transitional part and where we are now, and we could move forward. But I'm concerned that there would be people in the group who will be saying no. We need to have all of those other bylaws that are listed in the CCW or worked on in the CCWG implemented before we can move on with this. I don't know how others think here. Alan Greenberg.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the CCWG. The CWG, there's a lot of work going on in bylaws. I mean, there's work going on that we're not even talking about. We started off by saying the people looking at the overall plan are doing a good job. That includes ICANN bylaw changes. It includes drafting bylaws for PTI. There's all sorts of work going on. It's going on. The CWG has identified a number of showstoppers where the CWG has not met the commitments. Those are being worked on. Both within the CWG and the CWG is monitoring it. I think from a point of view of implementation, things are going well. There are problems. We're working on them. I don't really think there's a lot more to discuss on the CWG.
Thanks for this, Alan. Any other comments or questions? And I see on the a CWG update here. There's this wonderful presentation at the moment. I don't know whether you can scroll. Can you all scroll through this? You can scroll through that in your own time, but you can see how the quality of the work on this and showing the percentage completion. And we are dealing also with the same when it comes down to the IPR process and when it comes down to enhancing ICANN accountability parts. Anyway, we've spent just over half an hour on this call. I think we can now move on to the next part of our agenda, and that's CCWG accountability. For this, I'm not sure, is it Alan or Leon who will lead on this?
I can lead if you'd like. I don't really care.
Okay, Alan.
Please do, Alan.
Person who has okay, so Alan Greenberg, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you. Two things. First of all, to highlight from the overview, you will recall we had a deadline or a timeline which culminated in January 22nd, but when the chartering organizations were supposed to make a determination of whether they were supporting or not. That timeline is out the window. We are currently working on a timeline which brings us almost to the end of January. In terms of making having calls that are addressing the various issues that were raised through the public comments, including those of the board. Those are proceeding. There are 2 3-hour calls a week, and so far there have been at least one other call that I know of. There's a lot of work going on. The work is going on by a small number of people which I think is causing is one of the potential problems, but it also has yielded some really high quality work. We're tackling the issues section by section and bit by bit, trying to come to closure in a meeting and then having a second reading, which will essentially sign, seal, and deliver each section. There is good interaction from the board members, and we're making progress. There are some areas, as I'll identify, where we have stumbling blocks. Other ones, we have essentially come to closure and are moving on. So from a high level, things are moving. Both the GNSO and the GAC have not formally submitted comments. The GNSO as a group has not said anything. There is a GNSO meeting tomorrow, which Olivier can talk about, where there may be something coming out of it, essentially, but I'm not sure if that's happening tomorrow, a recommendation-by-recommendation essentially vote, or maybe it'll simply be a decision to take that vote. The GAC also has made some comments but has not made any official statement, and that presumably is forthcoming. I'll let Leon speak to it, but apparently the CCWG leadership has said until we know what the formal position is of each of those groups, they're not going to try to come up with a new timeline. So that puts us in a never-never land of not quite sure what we're working towards. Presumably we would like to have a decision from the Charter and Goose before Marrakesh, but it's not clear how that's going to happen at this point. So that's where we sit at an overview. I guess we should have any discussion we want on the general level, and then I can go over some of the high points of things that have been resolved and the points that have not been resolved where there is specific conflict at this point. If that meets with your approval.
Alan, it's Olivier. Just a quick thing. There's been a lot of different threads, parallel threads, in the email mailing list as well. Are we going to look at each one of those threads as well? Because one, for example, to do with the which one was it again? There's so many of them here. There's a couple which I felt about taking part in, but wanted to first get a good idea here. Yeah, the consumer trust issue being a huge, huge threat at the moment, and I wanted to gain some feedback from people here.
Well, yes,
the consumer trust issue. So
what I was suggesting
that's one of the things you're going to touch on.
What I was suggesting is we talk about the overview, if anyone has any questions or comments,
and then we go
into the details one by one and say where we are, assuming we have enough time for this.
So then the overview-wise, so Olivia speaking, overview-wise, why is there such a delay? Is there a significant problem here, or what has the group found that is delaying it so much?
I'm not quite sure whether there are two things. Number one, there was a huge number of public comments, many of which were negative, and we're trying to address those one by one. The ALAC was prominent among those who had a number of red line issues there. So that's number one. Number two, we have two of the chartering organizations that at this point have been silent. So there's lots of work going on. We're not quite sure what the end point is. I guess Leon may be able to give more insight into the latter part in terms of the work going on. We're slowly trying to work through the issues. There's only a limited amount you can accomplish in a three-hour call, and there's only a limited number of three-hour calls people can survive.
And Alan, it's Olivier speaking. Just to let you know, as part of my GNSO liaison duties, I will be attending the GNSO's call. There's a single issue call tomorrow by the GNSO Council. And I gather the matters will be discussed, and if we have a call later on this week, I will be able to report on that.
And you won't be the only one. I mean, the rest of us cannot participate, but there is a listen-only channel, and some of us will be on it.
Okay. If there is anything that I should say, I think at the moment I'm seeing it as this is a GNSO matter, so I will shut my mouth. But if there is anything that you need me to say at any point, and that's valid for everyone, then please just Skype me
And I was going to say keep Skype going.
I'll see. Yeah, that's what I'll do. That's all.
Over to you, Olivier.
Unless
unless you want me to start going through the items one by one.
Well, it's your part of the call. I guess we can probably go through all the items one by one now, and we have 55 minutes, so we've got another 45 minutes on all of this. So, so you're in charge.
All right. Recommendation one is the recommendation on the empowered community. There are discussions going on inspection rights, that is, who has the power to request access to documents. The board has objected strongly to the wording that was put in. It believes the community itself should have, the individual parts of the community should have the power, not the community. There are people who are now saying that a single ACSO should be able to request inspection rights. I vehemently objected to that because in California, remember, we went into this because we lost membership and there are inspection rights associated with member. But in that case, it would have been the community, the member, that would have to make the decision. Now we're saying, there are some people saying a single SO should make the decision. It's quite clear under California law, the whole thing of inspection rights is not clear, but some aspects of it are. And that specifically says you should not have inspection rights because of your own personal business issues, which you happen to be able to invoke because you're a member. And I have significant worries of the CCNSO or the GNSO, which have very significant business interests, having the right to make demands. I suspect the board, for perhaps different reasons, is likely to have a similar position. And the question is, at what level do you have inspection rights? Can you look at the detailed ledgers going down to how much was paid to each individual and such? So I'm not quite sure where that one is going. There's a lot of discussion. It's certainly not a resolved issue right now. There was one discussion. I suspect it's going to be on the agenda again tomorrow, but I haven't actually looked. There is still discussion on whether the GAC should have decision rights. The GAC and the ALAC should not be put in a decision position. They're only advisory. That's the discussion that's been going on forever. I can't see it being resolved other than to accept what was in the proposal with some minority reports going forward. That's presuming the GNSO as a whole does not question it. The NCSG apparently now has some supporters in some of the contracted party side, not on the contracted party side, but in the business side, that may support their position. So that's going to be an interesting meeting tomorrow. So I think in general the issues on recommendation one are not resolved. I'm presuming we will come to closure on the inspection rights, and we will probably not make a change with regarding to who can have decisional powers. That's where I'm guessing we're going to go. Questions, comments? I think Avery has something in the chat. Avery says, can the threshold of a single participant in the community be sufficient to trigger the request for inspection? It's being proposed that a single ACRSO is sufficient to request to trigger inspection. The current model, it doesn't quite say. The board has suggested that the full power procedure with all of its stages be required to trigger the inspection rights. That, I think, is overkill. But I personally think one is not sufficient. I'm happy to leave it to not be very active in this discussion. I think ultimately the board will have concerns and they'll have to be addressed. So I'm willing to leave this one for them to fight. I see Avery's hand is up. Do you want me to handle the queue, Olivier?
Yes.
If you're okay with it, otherwise I can handle it.
Yeah, I'm fine.
You seem to
go ahead.
Well. Yep.
Go ahead, Avery.
Okay, thanks. Sorry if my hand is up at an inappropriate time.
No.
I very much agree with you that, yes, it could happen that the GNSO or CCNSO would come up to it for what could be considered an inappropriate reason. But I also think that it's possible that at ARJ, ALAC could, for example, be looking at the support of user communities or how the outreach is appropriately funded or whether there's any sort of, you know, omissions or malfeasance that it would be the only one that cared about because, you know, of its user orientation. And so that same advantage that we say might be inappropriately applied, you know, by GNSO or CCNSO could be something a power that the ALAC would actually want or need. So that's why I think that, but I think it should still be the community member. But I think that certainly, one should be able to get into that information, 1SO or AC. Otherwise, you know, as a formality, it can be done by the CM and of dealing with inappropriate or a surfeit of inappropriate requests. But I think that, you know, to require to makes it harder to get information, makes it harder to get transparency. And that is where the problem is. And I don't understand why we still have this strong anti-transparency drive against inspection from the board. So I would just ask people to consider whether it is a power that indeed this group would want. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. It's an interesting question. I hadn't actually considered that aspect. As I said, I've got enough battles to fight from a personal point of view. This is not one of the ones that I feel really strong on. The question also is who's going to define exactly what the level of inspection is. Do we have the right to look at every ledger entry? Can it be constrained to a specific subject matter, which apparently is what happens if you have a member-type query? It's a level of detail that I haven't gone into, and I don't have a lot of interest. I'm certainly happy to give it over to someone else. I suspect the board is going to be a little bit too reactive on this, but I can probably live with what they end up accepting. And I just don't think it's one of the ones that's our hottest point. So it's one that I can't get particularly excited about. But if there's someone else who wants to champion it, then we can go for it. I think the potential that we would use it for good is outweighed by the potential that registrars and registries or CCTLDs use it in a potentially abusive way for ways that are just going to hurt the organization in the long term for their business, for their own business needs. So I think the risk there is higher than the benefit for us. That's a personal analysis, and I haven't, analysis is probably not a proper word to use for it because it's just a gut feeling from my point of view. Olivier, your hand is up.
Thanks very much, Alan. Just a quick one, Olivier speaking. Is there or would there be any chance of ICANN being somehow affected if there were, I mean, you said abusive requests. Are we speaking about repeated requests Yep. Is there any chance that this could be used and then basically wasting ICANN time?
You bet. Okay. I'm not assigning a probability to it. Is there the potential if a single group can do this? Sure.
But I'd imagine, though, that if we were to design processes and implementation, one always puts all sorts of safeguards so that it cannot be abused.
Well,
so the current proposal sounds like a good thing, and I guess it's all in the implementation.
The current proposal is almost completely silent on all of these details, and it has raised worries because of that.
I'm just concerned that we're now going from the concepts to the design to the actual implementation, and that's one of the concerns I've had with a lot of things on this CCWG accountability, is that it's actually trying to even design things down to the last dot. And if we go into this, we're going to into so much time. It's a bit of a concern for me. Anyway, let's move on. Thanks.
But the opposite concern is that as soon as the bylaws are in place, the IRP starts being used to say ICANN is in violation of its bylaws because they won't give us inspection rights to the data we want. And, you know, there are implications in being silent on it right now. So, as I said, it's not one of the ones that I'm getting really upset about. The board has identified this as a public interest one, which means they are worried about that, and I'm happy to make comments occasionally in a discussion, but other than that, which get booed very quickly by a whole bunch of other people, and just let the world flow. Are we done with that one? No other hands. I will close document number one. Recommendation number two. This is the empowered community. There are a number of issues. The first one is the escalation timelines. There was a lot of concern expressed in the public comment that these 7-day and 15-day limits are not long enough for the ACs and SOs to act. It's hard to find fault with that statement. It's true. On the other hand, extending all of them seemed to be overkill because we would end up with processes which would take far, far too long. The current proposal, and it's not fleshed out fully, is that if you remember that the current process is somebody identifies a problem, an ACSO decides to petition to use the power. They then go to a teleconference with other ACs and SOs. If you've made a certain threshold of those ACs and SOs supporting it, we can go to a community forum. Community forum was originally envisioned as a face-to-face meeting, but now is essentially another teleconference. So there is talk about merging the two teleconferences and only have one sort of one process, but with longer delays associated with it. My only concern on that is if you really want to worry about exercising powers, how does the one AC and SO that has made the first decision socialize things enough to even convince people to attend the community forum teleconference? If you don't have a reasonable process to do that, you may never be able to exercise any powers. And that may go along with what the, you know, at large was looking for to begin with, but it doesn't yield a really good process. So there is some concern, but I think that's where we will end up going, of eliminating some of the steps, and but elongating some of the time frames associated with that. So any questions on that one before we go to the next one? Go ahead, Shen.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, just ask, on this particular recommendation, at the stage where the SO or AC makes the petition, and if the petition did not get passed, does it mean the SO, this particular SO or AC, can still restart the petition process? Is there a limit to the number of the SO or AC can make? And if there is no limit, does that have any implication on the resources of ICANN? Thank you.
I don't think the question was, if someone tries to raise a petition and it's not successful within the AC or SO, can they do it again? So in other words, if Shun comes to us and says, let's start a petition to do something, and the rest of the ALAC says no, can we do it again later? I do not believe there's been any discussion on that, and I presume that that's going to have to be covered within the rules of the individual AC and SO. So there's the potential that anyone, because remember, it's not just an ALAC member, any human being in the world can come to the ALAC and say, I want you to raise a petition on something. I think we, along with the other ACs and SOs that are participating, will have to put in place process to handle this, and we can ignore the problem of abuse until it happens, at which point we'll build some new rules, or we can try to consider it from the beginning. But I think that's wholly within the AC and SO. Until it gets out of the ACSO to be a petition, I think that's internal to each group, and each of us can handle it the way we want. That's my take, but there's been no discussion on it either within this group or within the CCWG.
Okay, thank you, Alan. This is Sean for the record. The other part of the question, which actually is my main question, is when the petition, when it becomes the actual petition, and if it gets through to being a, if it does not achieve the support, does it start the cycle back? That is actually the main question, because it seems to me like it should be a waste of time getting the entire community to have to go back again to review the document and then to get somebody to support the petition. It seems like it's a resource thing there. So I'm not really focused on the process of actually getting to petition. My question is, when the petition itself does not succeed, does the process restart?
Okay. You're asking if one group issues a petition, nobody else cares, and then they do it again. I don't believe we have any rules that we've written about that. And to be honest, I don't have a lot of concern about that. If the GNSO says, let's do something, and everyone else yawns, and then they come back 3 weeks later and do it again, we're going to have very little trouble saying no a second time. I don't think we're going to spend a lot of time debating it. So I don't have a particularly large concern. Should there be rules that you cannot have the same petition, then you have a debate about exactly what is the same. I don't think it's something that I'm particularly worried about, but maybe others are. Shun, your hand is still up. Okay. Next item is the issue of lowering the threshold if only 4 of the 5 groups are actively participating. There was a discussion on this, and one of the issues raised was, well, we're not really talking about abstaining someone, a group that actually says they're going to abstain. What the concern is a group that can't make a decision and therefore does not say yes or no, but also does not actively say are abstaining. I have a real trouble differentiating between the two. Groups sometimes, if you look at within the ALAC, sometimes people abstain on a vote. Very often they just don't vote because they don't get around to it. I can imagine on a community power, the ALAC simply cannot get to the point where we're ready to make a decision in the time frame. And I'm not sure I want someone else psychoanalyzing us as to did we abstain or did we just not make a decision. So I have some real problems with that. As we pointed out in our statement, the way it is worded would allow three groups to decide to do something in the presence of an objection, but in the presence of no objection, they couldn't do anything, which sounds backwards. Although the discussion in the CCWG has largely focused on the ALAC objection, the board has also objected to this very strenuously. So I don't see how it's going to go forward, but at this point I don't see we haven't had the discussion which says it won't go forward also. So I don't know where we are in that one. There's going to be a second reading, I'm guessing, and I don't know what's going to be proposed. It may have been published already, but I'm so far behind in my email that I'm not aware of it. Any questions on that item? Shun.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. This is Shun for the record. So on the threshold, Jordan sent an update recently, and there's still no clear decision yet on the threshold for approval of the fundamental bylaw. Does ALAC have a position on that particular item? Then the other question is in relation to if the quest to use the community power is actually not successful, that is, maybe perhaps the required threshold is not met, does the process restart? Is there a limit to the number of a call to use a particular power against a particular issue? Is there a limit to it? Because that looks like an open-ended thing for me. Thank you.
Okay. Our position was we would accept lowering the limit to three being required for the fundamental bylaws. We would not accept it for removing the board, and we were on the wall, so to speak, not for but not firmly against for the other two powers. So if he's currently proposing that it be lowered only for fundamental bylaws, that would pass our test. In terms of if something fails, can it be restarted again? Again, I don't really remember whether we had any limits. I don't think we do. But I think the community is not going to have a real interest in doing the same thing over again and wasting a lot of time on it. So I'm less worried about that. But I don't really know whether the answer is, maybe Leon does, if there is something specifically limiting the community from doing that, from trying a second time. Certainly it's not something we objected to in the in our formal comment. All right, seeing no more hands.
Tijani.
Tijani, go ahead. I don't see a hand,
yeah.
But go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, I'm not on the Adobe. I am on the
Okay,
car.
I see.
Okay. I would like to say that the introduction of the subject, as you did, seems to be wrong, because it is not participating, it is abstaining. You said this is not an abstention. It is an abstention, because when a person abstains, that means that inside himself, he's divided between yes and no, so he abstains. So it is the same here. You have a group, and the group, they are divided. They cannot find a consensus, so they abstain. They don't have a position. This is an abstention, and an abstention is a participation.
Okay.
So it is for me. It is a very important issue that we have to make it clear, because our consensus in Dublin was that whatever the number. Participating, we need to have these three agreements and not more than one objection. So now we are changing because I don't know what is. I understood from Jordan that he is afraid that the GAC may change the position because he cannot find a position. This is not our problem. Our problem is not to change the board because we have only three SO or ACs who wants to remove the board. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Tijani. And you have made that case on the calls. Let me try to bring some perspective to it. In the ALAC, when we have a vote, we have a box you can tick off sometimes that says abstain. We also have the situation where people just don't vote. So typically people do not necessarily abstain because they can't decide. They abstain because they feel they should not be participating in the vote at all. Now, sometimes people might use abstain because they can't decide, but that becomes an issue of psychoanalyzing why they used it. But it sounds like, from what Shun said, that we've won at this point. I don't think we need to continue to debate the logic behind a failed proposal. So if indeed there is still a recommendation to lower the threshold for removing the whole board, for whatever reason people do not vote yes or no, then I think we have a problem. If that's been off the table, then I don't think we need to debate the issue of why people abstain or whether someone being silent is really an abstention or not. So I'm happy to leave the question unanswered if we end up getting what we want. The theoretical discussions are interesting, but of less importance. So I think we got to go into the second reading on that one. And by the way, when I was presenting at the beginning that there is a substantive difference between not deciding and abstaining, I was quoting Jordan. I wasn't giving my own position. From my position, I think we have to treat the two the same. The next one is the board has suggested that instead of using absolute numbers in the number for or against, we use percentages. The percentages they proposed, 60 and 80, would essentially work for any current proposal to increase the number of ACs and SOs. When I say work, they say they make some sense. The proposal that the percentage, for instance, does not work if you reduce from 5 to 4. The general feeling in the group was, although percentages could be a good guideline or default, that in any case where we actually increase the number of ACs and SOs, we would really have to look at the substance and make a case-to-case decision. If, for instance, the GNSO split into five groups, as the DNSO did into the CCNSO and GNSO a number of years ago, it's not clear we would want to give each of those groups the equal weighting. There may be a special case. We might come up with an advisory committee that has a completely different nature than the others and not want to give it the same thing. So there was a strong feeling in the group on the call at the time that we could use percentages as a default or as a recommendation, but not tie the organization to using them if we grow the number of ACs and SOs. The board will get back to us on whether they will agree to that or not. So I'm not particularly worried. I could live with the percentages if we put them in. I think it would be a dumb thing to do, but I suspect we could live with it. Because any bylaw that will allow us to change the structure will also allow us to change the percentages ultimately.
Jenny?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I think that you have demonstrated in your mail that this percentage may work for increasing when the number of issues...
I'm sorry, we have music coming from somewhere.
And this is Terry. We're trying to locate. Apologies.
Okay.
Classical.
It is? Okay. Okay, thank you. So I said that the percentage may be used for when we increase the number of SOs and ACs, but cannot be used when we decrease it. Because you demonstrated it, in your mail, but also because if we cross a certain number of certain low number of SO and ACs participating in the decision making, all these thresholds would not work in the, anymore. So we have to make it clear that there is a minimum number to use the thresholds that we have now, even with the percentage.
Thank you. Yes, you're quite correct. If we end up saying that we must use the percentages, then has to be a caveat that it only applies for five or more. It cannot apply for the four. The numbers just don't work. You need unanimity, which I might support, but violates one of the cardinal principles that we've been using all along. So at this point, I don't know where we stand. I personally can live with percentages, but I think it would be a dumb move. Hopefully, we'll end up with something that makes sense.
And also, Alan, even if we don't use the percentage, we have to add a point regarding the minimum number of SOs and ACs participating in the decision making. Because the threshold we decided in Dublin would not work if the number decreases.
Well, but at this point, we are planning to put in the bylaws that there will be five. So it would require a bylaw change to lower that. So I don't see a problem there.
Okay.
Sean?
Yeah, this is Sean for the record. Just want to get clarification on the percentage thing. If the number increases, will the percentage will it really work? Because if the number increases to 6, for instance, because some of the percentage outcome will run to decimals, so how will it really work? Will the approximation be done towards the support?
It's not a problem. If you say that you need 60% of 8, then it's 5. You have to round up. I mean, you only need 4.8 groups for something to pass, but since each AC and SO must say yes or no, there are only whole numbers. So you must exceed. Must be at 4.8 or above, so it becomes 5. If you look at the table I distributed, which uses a roundup function, it works quite well. The only reason something wouldn't work is if you end up with the threshold being equal to the total number, which means unanimity. But it's okay for 5 and above. One can argue if it's the right number or not. That's a different issue. So we don't have there is no problem with that. Once you go above 5, the numbers yield usable results. But as I said, I think it would be dumb to commit to doing that without any flexibility in the future. Olivier.
Thanks very much, Alan. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. And I think that from my perspective, the working group is yet again falling into the classical trap of trying to look at every single possibility, if this, if that, if the Earth stops spinning, what do we do type thing. If there are going to be some more SOs or ACs participating or less SOs and ACs participating, then it's obvious that the numbers are going to have to be changed anyway. As long as we say that the numbers are going to be set at the moment as XYZ based on the current numbers of participating SOs and ACs, and that will be changed if there is one more or if there is less, then I think we're clear. But trying to cover every single eventuality and certainly using percentages, which to me sounds like a one-size-fits-all, or in fact, one size doesn't fit anyone, is a bit of a treacherous step forward. Thanks.
Well, Livy, then you may want to get onto the call and make that case. At this point, although they may change because of the discussion at the last meeting, the board has said that either we need percentages, which will be honored if there is ever an expansion or an algorithm to come up with the number, which essentially maps to something similar to percentages. Most of us have said we do need flexibility and it should be debated at the time the number of ACs and SOs increases. So we have a conflict at this point. The board has taken a position, and we're trying to work it out. I don't see what else to say. My personal position has percentages are a fine default or recommendation, but shouldn't be cast in stone. And it'll probably be raised on the call tonight. If you want to participate, you're certainly welcome. But that's where we are right now. It has been raised. We can't pretend it hasn't been raised. Just like the CCWG can't pretend we haven't raised issues. They have been raised. They're on the table. They need to be discussed.
Tijani.
Go ahead, Tijani.
Olivier, I think that the board raised this point because they are afraid that if we don't make the mention in our text, it will be considered as it is a fixed number. That's why they come up with this percentage. But I think we are on the right way because we are all trying to find a way to make it change when the number of SOS and DCs change. But in which way and how we are trying to find. We said on the call that anyway, when the number changes, the bylaw has to change. And when we change the bylaw, we will change the threshold as well. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the real concern, which has not been spoken, is there is a fear that should we ever add an AC or SO, the existing ACs and SOs will gang up on the new one and basically say we're not going to dilute our power. Sure, we can have another AC and SO, but we're not giving you any power. And I think there's a fear that is what that might be what will happen. And certainly that goes along with how humans act in many, many cases. So that would not be particularly surprising. If you look at the fight, the next item on item two is in fact equal weight for the ACs and SOs. If you look at the fight that is being put up from some of the SOs or some parts of the SOs that the AC should not have any voting rights or should have minimal voting rights or minimal weighting, there's a reality that if another AC was created, would the existing SOs allow them to have any voting rights or any participation rights? And so I think the casting in stone the percentages or an algorithm for how you increase avoids the problem. And that's why I believe it is being suggested. And I think it's a real problem. But I don't think we can avoid the discussion of whether simply extrapolating using the current percentages is the right way in any given case. So I think that's where we stand right now. Olivier.
Thanks very much, Alan. Ludovic Abdel speaking. And of course, when one looks at having a small number of votes for each SO and AC, the percentages would round up or would round down and might be totally unsuitable, in which case I would say that each SO and AC would have 50 votes, let's say. And at that point, the percentages would not have to round up or round down, and the percentages would still work. But I still do feel, and I understand, yeah, if another AC was created, but, you know, we're trying to cross every single bridge now, and it's difficult. I'd say the answer, if you want to not have rounding up or rounding down of number of votes, then you just multiply the votes by 10 for each one of the SOs and ACs.
Yeah, but remember,
Olivier.
When a new entrant
will come in, it'll just dilute it a little bit more.
Yeah, remember, Olivier, we avoided the whole concept of calling them votes or giving them weights. We are not using that terminology. If you now go back to saying there will be 5 votes or 50 votes or 100 votes for each AC and SO, then you go back into the question of can we divide them among the constituencies?
Then let's not even get into this discussion.
Well, and that's where we are right now. We're not getting into the discussion of whether there is of multiple votes. we are where we are. Right. The issue has been raised, and we're trying to work through it. If anyone here feels they would die on their sword before allowing percentages, then someone needs to say so. Otherwise, it's an issue that we're watching. We're trying to encourage people to do rational things, but it's not a die on our sword one. That's the direction I think the five members need from this group. And I'm not hearing anyone say die on the sword. If the recommendation of this group is let's not talk about it, well, I can't stop. We can't do that. We're talking about it. Sebastian.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to die for anything about ideas, but I think that from the beginning is that yes, multiple voice within each SONAC would have been much better than just one single. Once again, my rationale is that okay, ICANN is organized around SONAC, but that's not the only way to express your ideas, to coordinate a discussion and so on and so forth. But we are where we are. For me, it's one of the points I really disagree. But at the end, if the percentage are not working, then I don't know why we spend time to discuss it, and I don't know why we, the board, is pushing for that, because it's just no sense. But if you ask me, yes, stop discussing that and let's go for more important topics. Thank you.
I agree completely. Nobody in the comments that I'm aware of has raised the issue of going back to multiple votes and divided votes for ACNSO. So I think that's off the table at this point. Whether we each think it was the right way or wrong way, I don't believe anyone pushed it in their particular comments. We may see something different from the, coming out of the GNSO, but I don't think it's on the table right now, and therefore we're not likely to reopen it. So we are talking about a single yes or no from each group, and the question is, how do we handle changing that if there were more ACs and SOs? The current proposal says silence, and we make the decision at the right time. The board has said we must have a cast in concrete way of making that decision. We'll see where we go at this point. It's not something that I feel is the die in the ditch one. And the last item in number two is, again, the issue of AC, the equal weight for ACs and SOs. I think we've talked about that one ad infinitum. There are large parts of the NCSG and now some parts of other parts of the GNSO that are pushing for lower or no weight for the ACs. The theory is that advisory committees are just advisory right now, so they should stay that way, and SOs, which are not groups that currently have any rights to change the direction of ICANN, will be given those rights, but not ACs. So I think it's a no-winner. I think it would die if anyone tried to advise, push it. I think the board would object to it. But it is on the table right now, and it is what it is. Clearly, the ALAC has said that this is a die-in-the-ditch issue for us. So that's clear. Olivier.
Thanks, Alan. Two words, red line.
I think that's what die-in-the-ditch means.
It's nicer. It's the official way. You don't say it's a die-in-the-ditch issue.
No, I believe our formal comment said something to the effect of the ALAC could not accept.
Yeah.
Okay.
Olivier,
done.
Alan?
Yes, go ahead, Jojani.
Olivier, I'd like to ask you, since you are the liaison with the GNSO, is there other groups inside the GNSO that are lobbying for lowering the level of power of the ACs against the SO?
Yeah, thanks very much for this, Tijani. It's Olivier speaking. There hasn't been any discussion on the GNSO council list regarding this. the discussions have taken place on the actual the individual constituency mailing list, which I'm not part of. And so far, no one has openly asked for this on the council list. Now, there is a meeting of the council tomorrow, as I mentioned earlier, a single-issue meeting tomorrow, where the council will be putting forward its responses, pretty much like the kind of response that we gave to the public comments, and they haven't even done this yet. So it will be interesting to hear the discussions tomorrow, and I will be able to let you know more on who else thinks in the GNSO, if there is such a thing indeed, and if it has reached the council. I'm still yet to know whether this is an individual view from some members of the different stakeholder groups or whether it's a concerted view. And once it reaches the council, it should be interesting.
Yeah, I put my own hand up. Since I'm not the GNSO liaison, I can be less politically correct than Olivier is. We know it is a formal position of the NCSG. We know that not all members of the NCSG agree, however, but it's likely to be a formal NCSG position. There are rumors that there has been horse trading going on between the NCSG and some other constituencies, saying that if you support this, then we'll support something that you want. Those are rumors. I have nothing substantiated, and until we get a formal response from the GNSO, we will not know. And even then, we might not know. So, interesting discussion. I'm not sure we want to spend time on it. We're only on recommendation 2 of 12 at this point, although we're not going over all of them. Olivier, to what time do we have? Till when does this meeting end?
Yeah, thanks very much, Alan. It's Olivier speaking. I've just been told by the interpreters that we have an extension of 15 minutes. So let's just do another 10 minutes, please. And then I gather we will need another call this week. And we have the interpreters already booked for Friday this week.
Okay, let's continue then. The next recommendation of interest is recommendation 4. The item that is the substantive one there is an ALAC issue, not only ALAC, but other ones, other people also, of mitigation of risk. That is, if we try to remove a director, what are the chances that that director will attempt to sue ICANN, the ACSO, the single member, the single designator, or individuals. If I, as the ALAC, stand up and say the ALAC wants to remove a specific director and this is the reason why, does that director then have the potential to come back and say, because you have said this in public, and remember, we are required to say it in public, because you have said this in public, that I now can't find a job. No one will hire me because this is on the public record. And if you Google my name, you're going to find that I was, people said I was incompetent or people said I was whatever, and therefore I could personally be sued for it. Or you could be sued as ALEC members participating in the discussion, or whatever. There was some wording proposed in the first reading that had the right intentions. That is, directors would sign a waiver before entering into the directorship saying they would not do that, and possibly ICANN would indemnify, that is, say they would cover costs if anyone did sue. It's not clear you can prohibit someone from suing altogether. Due to the criticism, the lawyers came back and reworded it into something far more extensive, and from my point of view, it addressed all of the questions to any degree. The board has come back and said they would not agree to either a waiver of rights or indemnification. At that point, I think we have a real problem in that I don't believe that, certainly we would never take part in such a process where we don't have some level of certainty. Now, I can live with that, to be quite honest, that we'll never take part in the process to remove directors. But, again, if we're creating a power to create a power which can never be used, doesn't make an awful lot of sense. we're putting an awful lot of work into drafting bylaws that could never be used. At this point, the board's position is they might consider indemnification of chairs or maybe even the whole AC or SO council or committee members, but they would not consider a waiver, and they have to get back to us on that, so we don't know where that one stands. Personally, I think we could live with no waiver and no indemnification, but it would virtually guarantee that we would never participate in the process. So that's where I stand anyway. We have Shun and Sebastian.
Yeah, this is Shun. My comment is an overall comment, not on this particular topic. Can I go ahead or hold on?
I don't know what topic you want to talk about, though.
Okay, it's just on the general, it's on what you're discussing. I wanted to ask you, at what point will the CCWG be making decisions on the past all the discussions? Because there has been first reading, I think there has been second reading of some of the recommendations. At what point did they make decisions on the discussion? Thank you.
Well, assuming there is not someone who is objecting to what is in the second reading, and particularly the board, because it's quite clear if the board objects to a second reading of something, then that second reading can't stand. You know, it's going to have to come back to the group again. And that's where we stand on this particular issue. I don't know where that noise is coming from, but it's very annoying. Sebastian, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Alan. I tend to agree with you about so be it, and we will not participate to the discussion of removing board member. But when you say we will not participate, do you think that we will not participate to remove one, or we will, and then we will not participate even if we disagree with the removal, or we will participate in the positive sense, that's to say we don't need to remove one, positive sense for the board member, I need to say. I don't know if it's clear, but my question is that, do you think that we don't need to participate to anything about removal of board members, or can we participate not saying things against the board member?
No,
we will be protected.
Yeah, all I'm saying is if we do not have either a waiver and indemnification, then I, as chair, would not want to make comments that could be deemed that I could be personally liable for in the future. You, as an ALAC member, I would think, would be unwilling to make a statement in a community forum or in a public meeting saying that this director has done something which you object to if you have personal liability because of that. So I think that would prohibit us from making any statements about the individual person. It might inhibit us from voting to remove them, because the action of voting perhaps could be deemed by some to be defamatory. I don't see any reason why it would stop us from voting to object to the removal. There's virtually no liability there. So I don't think it would stop us from participating in the process. I think it would stop us from acting against a director in a way that could cause liabilities to the individuals. So, but yes, we could still object. You know, if everyone else wants to remove Rinalia, we could say no. I don't think there's any liability issues, and it's only liability issues that we're looking at that were our reason for raising this issue. So I don't think there's any reason we couldn't participate in the process, but it might limit certain types of participation. Any other questions? Seeing nothing, let's go on to the next item.
And the next item we have, I believe, is recommendation 7 on the independent review process. There's a lot going on here, and most of it, I think, is moderately harmless. The question is, what can the IRP, the independent review process, look at? And if you remember, currently all it can say right now is we have violated our bylaws. One of the CWG requirements is that the IRP can be used to address actions or inactions of the PTI board, which would not be violations, in my mind anyway, of the ICANN bylaws. So it's not clear what kind of remedies the IRP could have if one brought some of those. There are also questions of whether the IRP should be used on DIDP, that is document disclosure questions, and the board has said that if that is done, it's really having the IRP dipping into operational issues and not just bylaw issues. And the current answer seems to be that, yes, we can include some of these, and the implementation oversight group will determine exactly how these can be remedied. I have a problem with that, because you'll recall we originally said we can live with the IRP if all it says is you violated your bylaws or you didn't violate your bylaws, but it doesn't prescribe the actual solution. We are almost giving to the implementation oversight group, the ability to add new types of remedies. And I have some concern over that. I don't know if it's a widespread concern in this overall group. So I can live with pretty much anything the IRP we're talking about at this point, unless it gives the implementation group too wide powers in making decisions in the future. And again, I think this is one of the die-in-the-ditch red line issues for the board, so I'm not sure we have to fight it a lot at this point. There are a number of other issues at play here, and that's to exclude IAB or IETF issues from the IRP and numbering issues, and I think those are generally accepted, so I don't think there's a problem there. So my only concerns are the oversight group and what powers it has. Other than that, I don't think these are issues that we need to fight for in any great way. Comments, questions? Okay. There are two more issues that have been discussed. Just let me look at them quickly and decide whether it's something we really need to talk about.
Ellen Napri's put her hand up.
I don't see a hand, but go ahead, Avery.
Yeah, I took it down after you moved on. This is Avery speaking.
Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to... Matt, but one is the CWG didn't actually require that it be the IRP. It required that there be a mechanism. The CCWG says we want to use the IRP. The other thing I wanted to bring up on the implementation is there will be a bylaw that relates to the PTI and a set of them dealing with it. So it's not that no PTI issue could ever relate to the bylaws. It's just that there may be more issues that we want to cover and such. And perhaps the bylaw to open up, to make sure that those issues can be dealt with is one way of dealing with it within an IRP. So in the CWG side that's working on its bylaws, perhaps they need to think a bit, and I say they, I mean we, need to think about it some more on that side as well.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you, Avery. Yes, you're right. There will be bylaws, so it's conceivable a bylaw could be violated. But the IRP or whatever process is used, I would think is more likely to be over something like
you didn't honor the terms of a contract. You know, one of the memorandums of agreement with one of the user organizations or something like that. And it's not clear that is a bylaw issue. But you're right. At this point, the CWG has put in a requirement. We need to address the requirement. I don't particularly have a lot of skin in the game trying to figure out what the answers are, but there are people working on that, and I'm happy to leave it to them. Olivia, the other issues that we have to deal with are, number one, the human rights issues, and there's this still discussion going on whether it should be included, how we should address the concerns that have been raised. You'll remember the ALAC concern was the absolute inclusion of a one-year deadline in the bylaws. There seems to be general agreement that all of these absolute deadlines should be targets and not commit ourselves, you know, to, again, you know, fall on our sword if and be in violation of the bylaws if we don't meet a target for whatever reason. There seems to be general agreement on that. So from the ALAC issue, I don't think we have a problem. The more substantive issues of what should the bylaw say, when should it kick in, the board has a concern very similar to a personal one I had, that having a bylaw in without understanding exactly where it applies to the ICANN scope opens ourselves up potentially to IRPs that you know, that we don't know what impact they're going to have in the future. It wasn't an ALAC comment, and it's not something that we're pushing, but the board certainly has that concern. And I don't really remember which way we're going to go forward in the second reading. Maybe somebody else does. Olivier, your hand is up.
Yeah, thanks very much, Alan. It's Olivier Capanablon speaking. I'm jumping in because we are reaching the end of the call for the interpreters.
Okay.
And I guess the issue of human rights is a substantive issue. There is a call, I think it is tomorrow, there's an accountability call tonight. Do you have everything you need, you as in you and your colleagues, Cheryl and Tijani, et cetera, who are all on this CCWG? Do you have enough to be able to respond and take part in the call tonight? And can we then continue with all of those substantive issues which we have gone through on the Friday call? I believe we will need a call this Friday.
Yeah, on most of the issues, yes. The only issue that I think I do need to alert you to, we don't need a discussion, I'm just going to make a statement. We made some very strong statements on the mission. Some of those are being addressed. On Article 1 of the bylaws, which includes mission, core values, and commitments. There's been a lot of fuzz going on because things that we wanted in core commitments, people said you're changing the mission, and we've made it clear that there are different parts of Article 1. The issue on consumer trust is one where we have had some substantive discussions. We do not have closure. The two sides are getting more and more rigid, and it's not clear how we are going to resolve that one. We will need to have a discussion on Friday on the consumer trust issue. That's all I have to say at the moment.
Thanks very much, Alan. Olivier speaking. You said we will have a discussion on Friday on the consumer. We, as in the ANA Issues Working Group, will have a discussion on Friday.
Yes, that's correct.
Perfect. Okay.
I do not believe there will be any further discussion before then in the CCWG, although I haven't looked at tonight's agenda.
Yeah, thanks. That was the gist of my question, and so that's fine. Sebastian, you have your hand up, and then we'll have to close the call.
Yes, thank you very much, Olivier. Sebastian Bachelet speaking. I wanted, but we will do that hopefully on Friday, discuss about the question of Workstream 2, the content of the Workstream 2, how it will be organized, and the budget for that. There are some discussion on that on the list, and I would like to be sure that what is our common position on all those issues. And the second point is that I would like very much that we had short discussion about face-to-face meeting, if it's happened or not, if we want one or not, and when. And last point, I hope that the time on Friday I will be available, because I have a hard day on Friday, but I will try to join you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks very much, everyone. Olivier Capin-Leblanc speaking. So we've already got Friday's agenda all worked out. We'll start with the human rights. We'll have the consumer trust issue, and also a discussion on the face-to-face, the need for a face-to-face, or the need or not for a face-to-face meeting of the ALAC. And finally, also, any of the other issues that we haven't touched on today.
Well, we've had some.
And, of course, any issues that will arise from the discussions that you will have had on the call later on today.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I thank you all. The next call will be on Friday, as we just said, 1700 UTC. And with this, I'd like to thank the interpreters, Veronica and David, for having spent more time with us, an additional 15, or actually nearly 20 minutes by now, and to close the call. So this call is now adjourned, and thanks to everyone. This is very, very good work today.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.